Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
A very warm welcome to all you listeners to the Flats and Shanks podcast. I, myself, am Tom Shanklin, and thou are...
Thou art thyest, David Flatman, England rugby legend.
Good morrow to you, Sir Flatman.
Have you got a book coming out?
Why?
Well, just have you got a book coming out or not?
No, you know the less people know about me, the better.
Yeah, there is that.
I feel like I'm the only one that hasn't, mind.
Yeah, it's only you and me then, is it?
Yeah. Yep.
I might do a book. Everyone's got a book in them, except me and you.
Yeah, but you're going to have to come out with something, mate. You're going to have to come out with an ailment. Maybe you could, you know, your elbows. Maybe get your elbows yeah, chopped off and then bring a book out. You can't just bring a book out anymore, mate. And that's it. You've got to bring a book out with...
A revelation.
Yep. That's it.
Do you remember when Richard Cockerell, I think he has said that it cost him a lot of England caps, but... He was first choice for England or close to it at the time, and he released a book saying that he'd found out he'd been dropped from a game by text from Clive or email or something, and that was it. Clive never picked him again. But it sold. How many books did you sell? Well, I sold a couple of books, but not enough to cover another 20 England caps. Fella.
Yeah, you could get book. Someone write a story about you. I don't really have a great story, to be honest, but I just make stuff up. You could just make stuff up, throw the boys under the bus. It'd be a hit sell.
Yeah.
Like My Story by Katie Price.
Yeah. You know,
just proper scandal.
Yeah.
But I won't do it, mate. I refuse to do it.
I worked with someone once. I worked alongside someone.
Is this when you worked for a woman? Bath communications manager for a month?
2 years. No, it's not. And it was director. I remember I worked on side. She was really good at her job, whenever. And then one night we were walking out of the pub and I heard a squelching, and there was, it was a dry night. It was summer, but there was, I don't know why I'm going into this. There was liquid coming out the top of her knee high boots or just under the knee boots kind of thing. And turned out she was drunk enough that she'd wet herself. And weed into the boots and was squelching wee out. And turns out she's a lot more pissed than we thought.
Mate, and you're not allowed to talk about Mary Berry like that.
And every time I see her, she says, "Don't you mention the boots in your book." And I say, "Hey, I got you.
I'm never bringing out a book," is what you should have said.
Yeah, I'm not writing a book.
Have you read any?
I might write a book. It certainly won't be a rugby book.
Have you read any of your former colleagues and mates books they've brought out?
Do you know what I tend to do?
Look in the back for your name and then just
this
read
is not
those parts.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Like me.
Yeah, yeah. What I tend to do is go on Amazon and buy a copy of the lads' books to support them, because I feel like a good bloke, but I don't actually read them.
I thought you were going to say read the reviews on Amazon.
No, there's a couple of reasons for that. Is that one, I don't really read sports books. I don't read sports books. The closest I've got, I think, is Andre Agassi.
Know it all.
No, I read Andre Agassi open, but I'm not that into sports books. I like other books. So that's one reason. The other reason is, being honest, they're all such big dogs because that's why they can justify having books out, and it just makes me feel crap about my own career because I hardly got any caps.
Well, look, mate, chop your elbows off because we know they're knackered. Bring out a book and you can have some sort of special attachment to use to turn pages, all right? And I think you'll sell loads.
That could be the hook. That could be the hook.
Excuse the pun.
Yeah. yeah. I don't know. I really want the lads' books to do well, but they're not the sort of books I generally read. Although I could see myself reading Hass and Mahler's and Dylan's, actually, because they're just good fellas. Like, they'd be good, but I still...
Mate, hold on.
I'm more like...
Hold on,
I'm more
just
like
flying
to buy
in
them
now.
And not read
I'm
them.
Just flying in now. Bullshit. You're just saying that to be a nice guy. Yeah.
Mark
Dunder
myself...
Smith called you out the other week, actually, on all of this.
What?
On your little Channel 5, My 5 little preview.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Fair's fair. But I openly admit it. So I buy a copy of the book off Amazon, the cheapest one I can possibly get, paperback, secondhand, ideally.
Yeah.
I will do that. I'll probably do that and to make myself feel like a good bloke, but I won't actually read it. Not because I don't think they'll be good. I think I probably would enjoy them, but they just, sports books aren't really my kind of books. I was a judge for a sports book of the year once, along with a lot of other people, and they sent me loads of sports books. And I loved Shoe Dog, the Nike story. That was great. I loved Open by Andre Agassi. The rest of them, I just didn't enjoy at
all.
Yeah, but
Roberto Shoe Dog
Duran
isn't really
terrible.
Like an autobiography. It's more of a business story as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it counted as a sports book, but it got away with it. And I'm sure there are lots that I would enjoy. Apparently, Brian Moores is brilliant. I haven't read that. I've got a copy. I haven't read it yet.
Roy King's is really good. I mean,
is it?
Yeah, the problem is with rugby books is you know a lot of the stories anyway, so you know what's coming.
Yeah.
Now, I'm looking forward to your review of Joe Mahler, James Haskell and Dylan Hartley because, you know, you've said it now, so you have to read them and tell me all about it. Just paraphrase it, mate, in probably like a minute.
I haven't said it, but yeah, go on.
But I did read Michael Leiner's by accident, really, because I was doing a Q&A with him and I thought, well, I'll get a couple of books.
Well, you've got me now. I've read his as well. You've got me.
I thought I'd get a couple of books to sign for him. We could raffle them off and make some money for charity. And I actually caught myself reading it and then really enjoyed it, so kept going. Thought it was really good. Didn't actually realise how nervous he used to get before games, because you know, you think of Michael Leiner as one of the greats, which he was, and how brilliant he was. I know a lot of Irish people won't like him. He's broke their hearts in the World Cup, but yeah, you know, he used to get quite nervous, and you'd never think that looking at him and the way he played.
No, of course you wouldn't.
But you know, be like me and you. You know, feed off the nerves. Use it.
Yeah, or just eat less. That's what I did.
Mm.
That was good.
What are you doing, mate? You're fiddling around in the background. You're doing something.
No, do you know what I was just doing? No, I was just doing. I was just.
yeah, you're always up to something.
I'm just taking my jeans off.
Okay.
I'm comfy now. Now. I'm just in my pants now.
Yeah. I mean, try and get yourself comfy before we start.
Well, I was, but I...
And you've also got an issue with any Zoom calls eating. I think you save your food until we, on the Zoom call, just to look at, I'm relaxed, I'm eating. It's fine, you know?
How I do it.
Couldn't do it 5 minutes earlier, but...
That's how I do it. Yeah, but mate, I've eaten on like commercial Zooms where I'm doing like an appearance for somebody. I've eaten on those.
Yeah.
They don't mind. So I'm starving. Do you mind if everyone has mind if I have a sarnie? Nobody minds.
Well, they say that. Not to your face though, mate.
Hey, how are you, fella?
I'm all right. I'm all right. I'm upbeat, as you can tell. Probably a little bit down last week. It was a late one when we recorded, so feeling a little bit tired. But no, been good, mate. Quiet weekend. Nothing much going on. Lot of rugby to watch. Well, two games anyway.
Let me ask you this. This is a lifestyle question.
Okay.
When there's rugby on, you've got three kids.
Mm-hmm.
You're a busy guy.
Mm-hmm.
When there's rugby on, do you just sit and watch it live and everyone leaves you alone because it's your job?
It's not really my job. But The older two are fine because I'll just give them, let them have some Robux or something on one of their little games they play on their iPad.
Yeah.
The little one can be a bit of a nightmare, but he just runs around the house and comes in and out and, you know, just got to give him treats, basically.
Yeah, sweets. Soon enough, that'll be iPads.
Yeah. So you've got to bribe them a little bit. But normally, it's okay. Especially with these big games as well. You know, like it was a Heineken Champions Cup final. You know, you've got to watch those games live. It takes away the excitement if you're watching them pre-recorded. And then you find yourself just fast-forwarding through some of the boring stuff. So you don't get a full idea of the picture of the game that's going on. So I do like watching them live. But, I mean, Friday night games are amazing because, you know, kids are in bed or about to go to bed. So that's why I like watching the PGA Golf because they're always on at night because they're in America.
Okay. Yeah. So okay, I'll read you.
Nighttime sport is
that
good
Speedway.
For me.
You love a bit of Speedway, don't you?
Monster trucks.
The Luton Megadrome.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I often think, like, who are these people who can just sit and watch live games as they happen? Like, it never happens for me. I can never do it. I always have to record it and watch it at night or early in the morning.
You know what you're like, mate. You're like Katie Price. There's always a drama. There's always something, isn't there? You know, if there's a hard way of doing something, you will do it.
Yeah, why is that? I love an easy life and I make things so difficult for myself.
I think you like it. I think subconsciously you like making stuff difficult for yourself, gives you a little bit of an edge.
My favorite days are when I wake up and I don't have to do anything at all or be anywhere. Mm-hmm. And
it's quite regularly at the moment, I'd imagine.
Well, yeah, but you know when someone says you're busy, you automatically like, yeah. You find ways to keep busy. Like, I'm not doing any actual any work today. Well, I am. I've got to write a column, but I'm doing I'll write two columns actually, but I don't know when I'll do those. And I'm dropping kids off for play dates and it's half term and it's running around and I had magnet therapy, MBST therapy on my elbows and I met a friend for coffee to talk about her new business and then I've got to walk the dogs and you're like, hang on a minute, that's not work, but some of it is work, but it's not busy. Why have I got no time?
Structure your diary, mate.
Yeah, but things pop up, fella.
Yeah,
I know. You're right. And
it's different on half term though. I will, you know, it's...
Yeah.
It's all, everyone, it's just carnage, isn't it? You know, you're every man on the pump and woman.
I texted one of the mums from school yesterday about an idea for the kids this week.
Okay, yeah.
No.
Doctors and nurses.
And it's like, yeah. And she was like, oh my God, thank God you've texted. I've basically been trying to plan ideas for three kids for the next 5 days till, you know, it's like, this is carnage. And like, that is one afternoon slot booked.
Yeah,
it's sort of like, you know, it's a bit like that, isn't it?
You've got to be prepped, haven't you, for half term? You've got to get your house in order. You've got to get stuff for them to do, keep them occupied. You don't want it just moping around the house.
No.
Speaking of women, because we've just touched on it, what did you make of the Aguera hand on the back of the female touch judge? She's not a touch judge. She's a Lions woman.
The assistant referee, they call them, don't they? Is that rugby? Yeah. Touchy. Can't say touchy now in this case. Completely inappropriate. But football doesn't do anything about stuff. So football players are almost beyond sanction now. So there's evident cheating on every video. They're lying about getting kicked. They're rolling around. It's all lies. They're abusing officials. They're touching male and female more inappropriately, touching female officials. Life is different for women, whether men like to admit it or not. Men very rarely feel under threat in the dark or under threat because someone's looking at them funny or anything like that. He should be punished for it. And if he is, I think he probably won't be, but if he is, it'll be really light because players in football I love football, but they've become unsanctionable. And you could stop diving and cheating and all that stuff. You could stop that in 5 minutes, but no one wants to because the players are too important to penalise.
Okay, why would it make a difference if it was a bloke and he put his hand on the back?
It's because you and I...
It's quite clearly, he might have done that if it had been a bloke who was assistant referee. And we probably wouldn't be saying anything. But because it's a female and because it's been highlighted and because it's all over social media... it's blown up into this massive issue now.
So, I think it requires a little bit of slightly deeper thinking beyond, well, all he's done is touch someone's shoulder.
My point is, are we overthinking it? Are we overthinking it? She is an assistant referee, male referee, doesn't matter. It's an assistant referee. You shouldn't view it as male and women. He's touched an assistant referee, regardless of her sex. You're not allowed to touch people, but it's not like being an aggressive touch where a foul's been committed and everyone's running up to the referee, pushing the referee where he feels under threat, which does happen all the time. He's put hand on the back of the assistant referee. You're not allowed to touch him, but I don't think it was an aggressive manoeuvre. And my point being, are we just overthinking stuff because, oh my God, it's a woman. You can't be doing that to a woman.
I think, of course, as with all of these, as with anything that's ever caused outrage ever, there will be people that jump on it and use it as an opportunity to virtue signal and make themselves look like better people because they care about other people, even when they don't have to. So that happens all the time. I think it requires some thinking that's a bit deeper than simply, well, no one cares when he does it to a bloke. Actually, firstly,
they might.
I'm sure lots of them might, and I hate the way footballers, I've said it before on this podcast, the way loads footballers of treat officials is ridiculous because it means that 14, 15-year-olds are doing exactly the same at
and
weekends.
And you hate Sam Allardyce as well.
Don't hate him, didn't take to him.
Yeah, okay, same thing.
I'm sure he wouldn't remember me, so at least I remember him, so he's winning. what it's about is men. It's easy to say that men should be treated the same as women the same as men, or they want to be treated equally. Well, you know, he could have done that to a man, and nobody wouldn't be in the papers. Okay, so it requires. I think it's men, whether certain men believe it or not, that's up to them. I believe men, as the physically stronger and physically more powerful gender, as a rule, not always, but as a rule, have a responsibility to make women feel as unthreatened as possible. And, you know, as someone put on Twitter, I won't find it now because it'll take me too long, but this woman said, until you've been, you know, ogled on a, if we get ogled by a woman on a, you know, get leered at, well, not that it's ever happened, but if you thought you were looking particularly good or you had a great outfit on and you're getting eyed up and down by a woman on
standard
the bus, you'd probably quite like it.
But that's because you, for me, that, mate.
That's because you are not under threat. She might feel threatened and you might think it's ridiculous that she feels threatened, but far more women are assaulted by men sexually than men are assaulted by women, right, sexually. So they are effectively, in some cases, because of physical power, at our mercy. So we could hurt more people than we do, and it's our responsibility not to, just as women could hurt more men than they do, but it's their responsibility not to. I think you've got to think beyond the obvious, the sort of the London cabbie
point. Okay, but you're
talking
about a night, like your examples you're giving there is a night out, right? Or, you know, women that feel threatened by men.
Men putting their hands on women uninvited is inappropriate. If you know someone, or it's your mate's wife, or you're at the club and it's Claire who does the tickets or whatever, and you're mates and you've got your arm around each other like you would do to me or to Bob or to Bernie, that's different. This is someone you don't know. Putting your hand on someone you don't know when you are kind of a bigger, more powerful animal is inappropriate. You wouldn't do it anywhere else. You can't do it. And I don't think he was trying to intimidate a woman necessarily. He might have been, but I look at that and think he needs to be, everyone else needs to be shown that you cannot do that to male or female rest, but particularly men should not be putting their hands on women uninvited ever. That's what I think.
Yeah, I agree with that. I just agree with that. It should be, you should view the assistant referee as the assistant referee, whether it's a man or a woman. You're not allowed to touch refs. And I just think it was massively blown into proportion because it was a female. And what he did, you know, you're not allowed to do. You're not allowed to touch referees. But it shouldn't be the fact that she is a woman. I think it should be the fact that assistant referees, linesmen, whatever you want to call them, deserve more respect and deserve not to be touched.
Do you know? But do you know, if you're if you and
don't relate, it's difficult if you're going to relate this to a night out or if you relate it to going out. It's not. It's in a controlled environment. It's sport. It happens on the sporting field where there's not a level of threat like a night out, like people ogling at various different sexes. So,
but you've got, it is a controlled environment and it's got rules. One of the rules is you can't touch officials.
Yeah, that's my point.
But it happens all the time. So it's actually out of control. So it needs to be brought back into control because they're not obeying the laws. Mm. So
agreed.
It needs to be brought back in. And this maybe highlights an issue that's been an issue for a few years, actually, against male officials. Now it's a sort of a bigger, stronger man touching a smaller, less powerful woman. And she might feel threatened by it. We don't know. But actually, what's important, I think, I watched... Social Dilemma, and we discussed that. But one of the things it said, you should follow people, listen to opinions other than the ones that just sound like your own.
Yeah.
So I just, a few people retweeted stuff on that. And it's like, actually, the opinions you need to listen to are women's opinions as a rule. Like, it actually, let them say what they think and just don't tell them they're wrong. And there was one woman, I don't know who these people, I've forgotten who they are now because I'm not on Twitter now, but people saying it doesn't matter if, you know, Gary in row Z thinks it's all right, and he, you know, it doesn't matter. What matters is, does she think it's all right? Do the women watching think it's all right? And they don't, so it shouldn't be allowed. And it's the same in purely legal terms. It's the same with all officials, but it's not being managed. So now you've got men putting their hands on women in aggressive, confrontational situations where they shouldn't be allowed. And
I thought we said it wasn't aggressive.
No, it's, of course, it's more aggressive than if you're, he's not being, it's an aggressive situation. So he's confronting her about her decision. So the grip might not have been aggressive, might not have hurt her. It's not like a punch, but it's more aggressive than sitting in a tea shop. So everyone's pumped, you know, everyone's heart rates are up. So that he is confronting her about a decision, I presume that is why he's done it. So it is a confrontation of sorts, and men should not be able to use physicality in confrontations with women. That's what I think.
Yeah, I agree. I wouldn't say it's that physical. But anyway, more so, VAR having another shocker.
I haven't seen that.
Liverpool goal, voting him offside. Like, I don't know how football managed to get it so wrong. And it's not like isolated instances now, which VAR has messed up or the referee's decision has messed up. Because, you know, rugby just gets it right. And I would say rugby is a bit more complicated in terms of TMOs than football. Football is often, it's either handball, it's foul, it's offside, more so offside. But they just get it wrong, and I don't know how. It's incredible. Like, every week we're talking about issues with VAR, and you're not with TMOs. Obviously, you get the odd TMO, don't you, where it's 6 1/2 dozen the other, so no one's going to be happy no matter what, because whether the foot was in touch or whether the ball was grounded, you don't know. But it was just incredible, mate. Incredible.
But it happens all the time.
Yeah, it does. It does. Like, and that's why, like, I think it's great for the game of football, because it should be great for the game of football. It's probably not at the moment, and that's why you get a lot of pundits who hate it, a lot of coaches hate it.
Yeah.
But it should be for the better of the game, because it cuts out any sort of 50-50 decisions, really. It should be clear. It should be clear. It should be black and white. But at the moment, it's not. And I'm not actually sure of the whole process, whether, you know, referees are under too much pressure to make the calls, you know, when they're going over to the touchline, whether it should be taken out of the hands. I'm not sure. I think it's down to the referee, or is it VAR? Is it the third match official that calls it in some instances? But, you know, when you look at rugby, the TMO comes in, there's a two-way conversation, which everyone can hear, with the referee. The referee has a final decision, looks on the big TV, makes his decision, and calls it. You know, I think it's a great process which happens. And, you know, I'd say 90% we tend to get it right.
Yeah.
In sport, but no idea, man.
Yeah.
It needs to be looked at, because it sort of is ruining the game for...
I can't understand how it takes so long. Why is it taking so long to get it right? It's amazing.
Yeah, I know.
It's not complicated. Yeah.
And you need technology now in all sports, I think, you know, just to get the rules right, really, to because it's such a high pressure situation that you want the calls to be correct. You know, it's heavily involved in tennis, in cricket. You know, to the point where, you know, if they think it's an LBW, they track the ball, and you know, you've got to trust the technology that, you know, the ball is going to hit the stumps. It's computer generated, and you have to trust that, and that happens all the time. But I just, football, it should be easy, but it's not. It's not.
I know. They make a very simple game very complicated there. They've made that overcomplicated. You think about, I'm sure we're talking about Nigel Owens, ref, the timing thing the other day.
Yeah.
You even had a TMO then who was trying to get out of making the decision and saying, well, technically, you know, technically it's overtime. And Nigel Owens is like, I don't want technically. Was the clock over or not?
Yeah.
Well, technically, I don't want, was it? Yeah, right. Okay, thank you.
Well,
and you think that is, that's a human, that's humans using tech, and it works. It's the right call.
I mean, we'll we'll talk about it now because you touched on it. I think he was, yeah. I think, you know, he makes great decisions in really like high pressure situations, you know, where he takes his time, his brain is able to process it. He's not caught up in anything else. He's just purely thinking about it. And I thought it was brilliant. And for those that were saying, well, you know, the clock was still going, if you actually look what happened, you know, the penalty's given in 79 minutes something to Exeter, right? So Joe Sims has got a full minute to wind the clock down to take his kick. Okay, but Nigel Owens thinks that the time wasting, so he stops the clock and he wants the TMO to take 5 seconds off the clock. TMO says that he can't do that, so Nigel counts them down, says right, he's about to start his kick now, or the process of kicking, and counts 5 seconds and asks the TMO to start the clock. Now, for whatever reason, they weren't able to start it for another 5 or 6 seconds. They eventually start it, but as the ball goes through the post, it's like 4 or 5 seconds or 3 seconds left. And that wouldn't have happened if they'd started the clock when Nigel asked them to. So
yeah.
I think, you know, the referee is the decision. You know, everything, you've got people around you to assist you with it, but it's his word. It's his final word. And I just think he got it spot on. Not everyone will agree, but forget about, you know, what went on in the game. Forget about penalties, whether it's right or wrong and everything, which, you know, people are going to chirp up about. That decision, in terms of timing, he got bang spot on.
Yeah, I thought he was brilliant. Mm. I thought he was great. I thought he refereed brilliantly as well. Mm. Now, Baz, my mate, you know, yeah. Welsh Baz from WIU, he sent me this joke. Not a joke, he's forwarded me a tweet. Someone said, when we're in the cinema waiting for the film to start, I use my phone to book the seats around, next to, and in front of us. You can book loads of seats and it holds them for 10 minutes without having to pay. No one obscures our view and no annoying kids end up sitting near us.
Love that.
That is good, isn't it?
That is brilliant.
That is good actually. Knowledge.
I like going to cinema. Miss it, actually. I'm desperate to go see the new Bond when it's going to be released. But I cannot stand people who just eat sweets all the way through. All the way, you know. Just,
I thought
non-stop.
You meant to finish your sweets before the trailers.
Yeah, it's like you finish your sweets when you're doing a car journey before you get to the motorway. But
yeah,
nah, one pet hate that. Can't stand it. Another pet hate is on a dual carriageway when two lorries are trying to go at it. One's trying to take the other, but hasn't quite got enough power. I just don't know why the slower lorry, it was obviously slower for a reason, bigger load, smaller engine, doesn't just slow down a little bit and let the
just
one...
Just 2 mile an hour. Just 1 mile an hour.
Just, yeah, you know. Just let the other one overtake. But they don't. They go at it and at it and at it. Sometimes it takes 10 minutes. It's just pathetic.
Yep. Don't get me started on them. In the middle... Oh, I saw one of the electronic signs on the motorway, you know, that says like junction 18, 26 minutes. One of those said yesterday, I was on the road last night, and it said, keep left unless overtaking. And I thought, yes, finally, people are being told to not... And that somebody cruised underneath it in their Mercedes and just sat in the middle lane. They must have read the sign and just thought, no, I'm staying here.
Yeah. Another thing that annoys me is people trying to undertake you. And you're obviously... if you're on the right-hand lane and you can see another car up in front and you'd think, well, there's actually not much point coming in and coming out, you know, within a few seconds. You might, but someone, some clever dick, thinks they're going to undertake you. It's quite scary, actually, because... You know, you shouldn't be undertaken. You know, that lane should be clear in case there is something, an issue up ahead, yep. you can pull in. But breaks me.
I think well, really cool. I would never do this actually, but some people I've seen when they're about to get undertaken, they'll just indicate left.
Yeah.
And that will just will cause the people on the inside to brick it a bit, or but you don't want to, or just to think, oh, maybe I shouldn't be going there.
Yep.
I had a driver once back from a BT Sport game in the old days, and the old days.
Last year,
I've only ever complained about one driver, and I called the guys at BT Sport, and I was like, look, he's a lovely bloke. He's driven me before, but he is lethal. At one point, there were two motorbikes in the fast lane. And we were undercutting motorbikes at 90 miles an hour. And it's not BT Sport, it's the company they used, had this new driver or whatever. And I was like, look, I said to him, whoa, mate, you can't undercut. And he goes, oh, well, you know, they're sitting there. I said, well, you can't undercut, you know, and I don't like that. All right. And he slowed right down and chilled out. But he did it. He'd done it a couple of times before I said something. And that was before at Roadworks, he told someone to F off through the car like a bit of road rage. And I'm like, this guy's meant to be driving me home sort of thing. And I spoke to BT and they're like, look, thanks for that. I was like, look, I'm sure he's a lovely man. I hate to do this, but I actually bricked it a couple of times and that's not cool.
Yeah.
And 2 weeks later, got him again. I said, hello, mate. And I thought, oh, it's him. And he goes, yes, I understand you sent an email. I was like, oh, and they told him. He knew that I'd complained about him.
Just
and then
to clarify, Chris Chesney is still driving cars, yeah?
Yeah, exactly. Oh. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Just to finish off. Go on.
By the way, I remember when Tony Dipro's had a sponsored Land Rover Discovery back in the day when we were at Sarri's, and it had like Tony Dipro's Saracens on the side.
Yeah.
And Chez and I had these like semi-automatic BB guns. You might have had one as well, like a machine gun, but it was a BB gun.
Yeah.
Just a little plastic thing, but it shot them out rapid fire. Oh yeah, because we pelted our neighbour with them once, wouldn't he? When he wouldn't turn his opera music down.
Yeah.
Do you remember?
Yeah.
Through his window. And Chez nicked a Dippy's car and drove past the bus stop for the local uni and just sprayed them all with all these little pellets. Go on, have that. Get out. And it was like student scum.
You'd
and
he's go like, to
Tony Dipro's
that,
on the side. I know. I don't think any of the pellets actually reached the curb, but
yeah.
I mean, can't condone that.
Just to sign off my week before we touch on yours, I know you've been a little bit busier.
Really?
Made a lovely. We went Land Rover thing, didn't you? Tell us about that. Ordered a rolled sirloin from Field and Flower.
It's
delicious, mate. I slow cooked it as well. It was beautiful. I saw a photo of Dan Lydiot having a Sunday.
I saw that
lunch roast beef and everything. And it inspired me. I thought that's exactly what I want. So I had it at the weekend, and also. Watching a couple of things on Netflix. I'm watching something called Ratched.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Mildred Ratched, and it's quite quirky. It's got a little bit of a Twin Peaks sort of vibe to it. She's a nurse set in the 50s, I think, or 60s, in a nursing home, and her brother is not a nursing home, in a mental hospital. Her brother's in this mental hospital, and she's trying to release him. It's very quirky. She's very manipulative. It's good. One to watch.
Ratched.
Yeah,
okay.
One to watch with the other half.
Yep.
And I've also started Confession Tapes on Netflix.
Oh, right. Mm. Seen it advertised a lot, not watched.
Yeah. It's good. Watch series one, episodes one and two. They're part one and part two. Really good, really interesting, because obviously you're seeing sort of CCTV footage of confessions, but it's also really strange how some people confess to the crime when they're actually not guilty of it, and how they are coerced by the police a lot of into it. You know, it's quite scary actually how hard the police push you. And you know, when you're in a room for 7-8 hours and constantly being told something, you're tired, you're hungry, at some stage you're probably just going to go along with it just to get a break. It's actually quite scary how persuasive some police could be. And now a lot of these cases were years and years ago, and I'm sure interview techniques have changed a lot since then. But and also, you know, not all the time you're dealing with bright people. You know, sometimes you're dealing with very low IQ people, and think, you know, you can easily manipulate them to think they've done it, or to come out with the right answer.
Yeah, but or lead them in certain ways. Yeah. A bit like making a murderer.
Yeah, a bit like, you know, what you do to all your mates.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly it.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, I'm right with that.
I'm right with that. Anyway, tell me about it, mate. How was 50 years of... Was it 50 years or 150?
50 years. There weren't any Range Rovers around in 1870, as far as I'm aware.
No, good point.
That's a smart-ass comment, that, but it's a good one. Did my maths quickly, didn't I?
Yeah.
It was good, actually. So 50 years of Ranger, what we did was we went to Goodwood Festival of Speed, which, of course, is not on in its normal guise this year because of stuff. And, you know, it's the sort of day that you'd quite enjoy it because, like, Lewis Moody was there, Jason Robinson was there, and you're with the lads, and the Land Rover people are really good crack, and we had a nice lunch.
Of course I'll enjoy it, mate. I'll have a free Range Rover.
Well, anyway, so you'd enjoy the day, but... I like it even more because I actually love the. I'm a car nerd, so I know all the cars and
big time.
And I got there, and they said you can drive this, basically this classic, original 3-door Range Rover on the lap around Goodwood. I'm like, awesome, and it's a really slow lap, but you still get to drive it. And then I drove this other really cool mid-90s classic, and like for the afternoon, and we created the number 50 to be shot from a drone on the floor with 50 Range Rovers. But it was all Range Rovers from different generations, from the original chassis all the way up to the modern ones, and. Oh, it's brilliant. I love it because I just got to nerd off at all the cars. And then I did another Land Rover day the next day on Friday. And it's basically like a cook-up in the woods with a lady called Genevieve Taylor, who she's on Instagram as Genevieve at Genevieve Eats. And she's a chef, basically, but she's basically cooks over fire and does amazing, cool stuff. And I actually did a course. She's got a Bristol Fire School, it's called. I did a course in her, that you do it at her, in her garden with a few other people. It's really cool. And Phil Vickery, coincidentally, is doing it today. Today being Monday, she told me, oh, do you know Phil Vickery? He's coming to do my course for Monday.
He's having a day off making bread?
Yeah, well, he must have made some before he left.
Yeah, must have.
I said, what, you teaching him or is he teaching you how to make sourdough? So, yeah, that was good. And we had a cook up and took the dogs down. That was good. So she made this, and they videoed her cook, basically, for Land Rover. And it was really cool. And it was... The cook was a Philly cheesesteak, and I had a Philly cheesesteak in Philly. Remember when that Premiership game was in Philly?
Yeah, you ran up the steps. I remember that.
That's right, like Rocky. And it was hanging. The Philly cheesesteak. I went out with Alex Corbacero, and he had Philly cheesesteak. And I was like, mate, this is hanging. And he agreed. It was crap meat with crap cheese and crap bread. I was like, minging.
Yeah.
But Genevieve got a big fire going. And then cooked a big Bavette steak with mushrooms and paprika and onions and garlic and toasted some sourdough with butter. I made like it's unbelievable sarnie. Oh my God.
What's in a Philly steak though? So
basically steak, it's a sandwich.
Yep.
And you get a load of nice steak
yep.
and a load of cheese. But she added a big mushroom, oniony, garlicky paprika mix, which was lovely. But
is there it's a basically type of a steak cheese and cheese.
Well, no, so I assumed it would be like American processed cheese, which it sounds fun on the if you want to be naughty, but I've never actually liked it. So I was like, but she used really nice Stilton.
Yeah.
She used Brie or anything, but she just did a Bavette steak and Stilton sandwich. Oh my God, mate. It was ridiculous.
If you took the mushrooms out of that, then I would really like it. I just can't stand mushrooms, mate.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a texture. I just don't trust them, basically.
Yeah, don't trust the way they move.
Nope.
I remember Kyle Eastman. Remember Kyle Eastman?
Yeah, of course.
I wonder where he's playing now, because he left Leicester, didn't he, with that contract thing. I don't know where he is now. Could someone tell us, please? Kyle was so scared of dogs that when he lived with Ollie Barkley for a bit, two doors down from me, I had two dogs, and he'd come out of the house, and he'd have to check if I was in the street, and he'd get back in the car, and you'd see him looking up and down the road to see if I was there with my dogs, and he'd get out of the house and like bolt into the house. He'd only seen the dogs three times, and then once... I just saw him get out of the car and I went, woo, woo, woo. And he absolutely shat himself, woo, woo, woo. And he was like, I'm a human. Absolutely terrified. I won't get out of cars if there's a dog, a Labrador in the corner of a car park. He won't get out of the car.
He's probably a postman now. Overcoming fear.
I said, why? You're going to get, he goes, they're going to bite me. It's the way they jump and they move around. They're like, they're like shadows with teeth.
I don't like geese or swans, mate. I can't go anywhere near them. I can't go anywhere near them.
freak yeah, me but out. They will have you. Yeah. They're aggressive. They're like badgers.
So in the Range Rovers, right, mate, if you had to pick a year of a Range Rover, you can't pick, obviously, 2020. Tommy. What year are you talking about? 80s?
I'll probably go mid-90s with a V8. I'll probably go a 90. Thing is...
What colour?
They started making the P38s in 94, but the former model kept being made for 2 years. So I'd have a late model LSE. That's what I'd have.
Okay.
Sort of mid-90s, cool, old shape, V8. I'd probably have it in navy blue with tan leather. And I'd just drive it around feeling like Frank Butcher.
Mate, I can hear your mouth salivating right now.
Yeah, I'd drive it around feeling like Frank Butcher. Like I'd feel like Ross Kemp, be perfect. Or like Bobby George, that's what I'd feel like.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
No Pro 14/12, maybe 16. No Gallagher Premiership, but two massive European games this weekend.
Oh, Tommy.
Yeah. Started off with Bristol-Toulon.
Now, I thought, Tommy, that Bristol might struggle after they had it handed to them in the semi-final.
Yeah, because we talked about it last week, didn't we? But we also sort of mentioned that they are way too good a team, you know, to have two massive sort of defeats. You know, they were pretty poor last week. I just sort of had a little bit of a feeling they might front up. Nathan Hughes wasn't playing, but didn't really matter, especially when you score after 15 seconds.
Yeah.
Now, that was incredible.
That helps.
I mean, Randradra, you know, we know how good he is attacking. We know how good he is defending. But just that vision right at the start to catch the ball like that and to offload it down the touchline, not even offload it, but just the sheer brilliance of, you know, how quick he was thinking about it in his mind to get that ball. And I mean, that was the ultimate start for Bristol.
He's not trying to get himself into the game and make no mistakes for 20 minutes, is he? He's just flat out.
But it's, you know, it's the first kickoff of the game. You think you take it into contact, but no, he's just properly gone off the cuff, touch rugby. And Randall has scored a try. Doesn't he look like he should be playing under 12s? Or is it just me?
Yeah, a nightmare to play against, though. He's so quick. It'd be horrible.
So quick, so agile. And like, I don't know if you're like me, but I'd rather tackle someone big than someone small. Because, you know, you back yourself, you back your technique. But someone small, they can just turn you inside out and make you look stupid, basically. Yeah. But Bryce Heem there, a couple of times got caught short, stepping in. You know, and if you're Toulon, right, and you got the first kickoff, surely you're going to go away from the world's greatest player at the moment.
But there's a school of thought, isn't there? I remember when Vakatawa played his first couple of games for France, and one of them was against England, and I was commentating, and they kicked every ball, every kickoff they had, they put it straight on Vakatawa, and it was like, right, what we want is the most dangerous runner on the field to get the ball when our defensive line, when 15 players are on their feet and we're fully organised. So I think the thought was, give it to the best player, get him man and ball, and he's got 15 players to beat.
Which is fine, but if you get it man and ball. But
if you get it right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the kick has to be perfect. And it was a little bit too long for Bryce Heem to nail him. But if Bryce Heem is kick chasing, then someone has to fill in behind. And they did eventually. I think it might have been one of the second rows, Etzebeth maybe, who came around the far side then when Bryce Heem's chasing a kick. But, I mean, pretty slack, I would say, from Toulon straight away. But managed to get themselves back into the game. Bryce Heem scores a try after a bit of a mix-up behind, because that's what you're going to get with Bristol, though. Because they want to play sort of high-tempo, quite high-risk rugby, they do make mistakes. And they lose the ball in the middle of the field. Eventually, I think it's Tuiava throws it to Heem, and he scores in the corner. But really good win by Bristol. Max Malins, again, proving what a quality player and signing he's been for a year from Saracens. And you think they're going to miss Charles Piatow at the back, but I think they look better with Max Malins at 15.
Do you? Because it's one of those things that you mustn't ever say that someone's better than Charles Piatow, because he's so good that someone can just send you 10 clips and find you out.
Yeah.
It's like, actually, I wonder if they lose much at all. And
there's no doubt Charles Piatow was amazing. You know, when he when he's at Wasps at Ulster, incredible. You know, 12, 13, 15, wing, didn't matter. But you cannot doubt the fact that Max Malins has been brilliant and scored a wonderful try. Like, just slowed down a little bit, then accelerated again and glided through. We always say how sharp he looks and how quick he is. Mate, he's lightning, that bloke.
He's rapid. If you're picking Bristol's first team for the Prem final this weekend, which we'll talk about in a minute, I know they're not playing in it, but they might be. We'll talk about that in a minute. Do you pick Piatow at fullback or Malins?
Right now, I'd pick Malins.
Ooh.
Right now, because I think he's on that good form. Joe Joyce.
Yeah.
Big up top.
Yeah.
Got legs like a gazelle, mine.
Oi. He's European champion, mate.
I know. He's just
the king of Southmead.
Brilliant. Brilliant. But just pointing out
you got, mate, blokes like him. Oi, blokes like him, you got to watch out, all right, slagging off blokes like him. Because you go to Bristol, go to Ashton Gate to commentate. You get chinned down by the bogs, mate, by one of his boys.
I thought he was brilliant.
He's good.
Very bulky up top, but legs like a gazelle. He can run. Boy can
run.
Good.
He's high energy. He's like Elliot Stook. Elliot Stook is obviously he's bigger, I think, but he's a big man. They're all big men, but he's not a thunderously large man. But actually, he's got so much energy for someone of that size that they're mega useful.
Mm.
I mean, we're going to talk about Johnny Hill in a minute, and at the moment, there's no one can live with him.
Until we talk about Harry Thacker and what he offers around the park. Now, you might not get the same, sort of power in the scrum as you might do with Jamie George, but
they go all right in the scrum, Bristol.
Yeah,
don't they
do go all right in the scrum, but you just get someone who's quality in that back line as well. It's like having an extra back. You know, it's literally having another centre on the field where you can run moves off. You know, you call phase plays off the cuff. He's in position straight away, whether he's a ball player, whether he's a decoy. He offers so much in that back line. He's incredible. Brilliant signing for Bristol. Radradra was phenomenal again. Teams just let him go. It's scary, actually, because you watch him, no one really... When he collects the ball, no one really puts a lot of pressure on him. They let him go around the outside. They let him sort of... They guide him into touch, let him try and do his footwork stuff, and then try and take him. No one really puts a lot of pressure on him, because you can't, because he'll just step you and he'll make you look silly. So that's why when he gets the ball, he seems to have so much room, because they're just shepherding him out to the touchline, and that doesn't work. Phenomenal. He goes off after, I think, 50, 60 minutes, and... You know, Piers O'Connor comes on, and you know they still manage to get over the line. But really good Bristol win.
He's a cracking player, mind.
Yeah,
Piers O'Connor.
Yeah, he is a cracking player.
Top player.
But all are all of the Bristol Bears are a quality team now. I'm really happy for them with that win.
But I just like how, yes, they've signed some superstars, but you look at, and Malins was not the finished article, but it was a top player, really. But you look at guys like Harry Thacker, Callum Sheedy, Piers O'Connor, Luke Morahan. These guys were not big names.
Nope.
And they've made them better and better and better. And that is, for me, that's one of the key indicators of a good environment. That Chiefs are similar, and Saris were similar as well. You sign players of potential and make them excellent. And I think that says a lot about your setup. But yeah, nice of Bristol, that. Really, really good.
So Chiefs 31, Racing 27. What do you make of the game?
Guess what? Get this. I was doing something on Saturday, so I couldn't. I was actually doing something with British Airways at Heathrow Terminal 5 on Saturday, so I couldn't see the game live.
Yeah.
And that meant I didn't look at social media, which was nice all day, and I didn't know the score. And the kids went to bed, and everyone had a coffee, and I was at my parents' place, like, right, we're going to set up and watch the thing now, 10 o'clock, press play on the Champions Cup final, and I didn't know the result. And then just as the game's about 5 minutes in, I'm like, God, this is harum scarum already. Girlfriend was sitting next to me, and she scrolled onto her Instagram, and I just saw a picture of Parksy, James Parks, our mate who's one of the fitness coaches down at Chiefs. We played with at Saris, and I saw him kissing the Champions Cup.
What did you do to your girlfriend?
She's gone now. Yep. Still longer with us. She went to bed quite soon after that. But
didn't wake up.
Real shame, because that, I mean, knowing the result with those last 5 or 10 minutes as they were, ruined it a bit, because what a game. And one thing I'll say is that Finn Russell has dominated conversation for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
And there are people saying he's cancelled his own booking for the Lions trip. He doesn't perform under pressure. I disagree with that. I think he has repeatedly performed under pressure.
Oh, do you?
But think of the comeback at Twickenham. Okay. You know, 37 all or 38 all, whatever it was. He was at the point. That's massive pressure. They're about to lose by 50 at Twickenham.
Oh, okay.
You could argue. But anyway, he's a wonderful player, but there's no denying that he gifted Chiefs a couple of tries. You know, some of his passing was outrageously good, and some of it was just outrageous.
So, do you think he should go on the Lions then?
Well, last week, he's got to start. He should be captain. What I'd say is, as a rugby fan, I am desperate for the Lions to pick him.
Okay, interesting. Very interesting.
Do you want him to go?
Yeah.
Do you think he should?
Yeah, of course, mate. I'm just messing with you. I think he is. I think you know what you're going to get a little bit with him. You know, it's not going to be a clean 100% game. You know, the way he plays, you're going to get mistakes. That's just a given. You know, if he doesn't make mistakes...
He doesn't care, though. It doesn't affect him, I mean.
If he doesn't make mistakes in a game, that's just a bonus because of what he's like. But, you know, you look at that ball that he threw over the top for the Zeebo try. Just goes over the top of O'Flaherty. And O'Flaherty... Is it O'Flaherty?
O'Flaherty
just gets completely caught up. Bit of ball watching, doesn't quite know where he is. It was just a wonder ball. You know, it's a perfect ball. And he tries that again in the second half and inches away from going over Noel's head. If it goes over his head, Rassin down the left-hand side with three players. It was quite a big looping pass. Probably Hans might have done it, or maybe whoever outside him, Siobhansi, could have thrown it. Probably not, but even the kick, the little crossfield chip, would have been good. But, mate, I don't care what you say, it's inches away from being a world-class pass.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's what you get with him. And Noel is brilliant. He's up to it and intercepts it for a Slade try. And it's a really cheap try for Exeter to get, but great poaching. But that is, unfortunately, what you get. You know, he's thrown one wonder pass, he's tried to throw another, and it just hasn't worked. But in terms of what he offers, it is still a lot of magic in there. And, you know, there was a couple of kicks that nearly came off. You know, he put a kick through for Vakatawa that nearly bounces into his hand again.
Yeah.
But I know a lot of people on social media, because I had a little look, were saying, you know, that they weren't the two best teams. You know, that is gonads. It's knockout rugby. Saracens were beaten. who were the main rivals. Leinster were beaten as well. It's knockout rugby. These are the two best teams. It doesn't matter what happens in the final. It's all about the result. It doesn't matter how well you play or how many mistakes you make. It's all about
most finals are crap, actually.
Yeah, yeah,
boring.
I'd agree with that. But it was such an exciting game all the way through, and started off with typical Exeter, didn't it? Luke Cowan-Dickey. You know, driving line out try, amazing. That's exactly what you get from Exeter. I like the way he had a little quick tap 5 metres out and gave it to Sam Simmons instead.
Yeah, yeah.
And eventually Sam Simmons scores as well.
European Player of the Year.
Yeah, but all Exeter flats are so good at looking after the ball, you know, 5 metres out. You know, I can't remember the last time I saw anyone sort of fumble it, picking a gun, which is quite easy to do because there's an art to it. But none of them do. None of them do. Yeah. Harry Williams is really good. Alec Hepburn, really good. Cam Dickey. They're so strong in that position when they pick and go. Yeah. And you'd imagine that because, you know, they're props and, you know, it's a bit like scrummaging really, isn't it? You've got to keep low, keep your back
straight. Not that many props are doing it. That's the point.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Yeah. And I suppose that a lot of that is not just down to the weight of them pushing. It's to do with their power output as well. Which you get, you know, someone like Adam Jones, for instance. I know scrummaging is a lot different now, but the tight head Adam Jones, you know, there was a lot of weight behind him so he could hold up a scrum. But, you know, probably being dynamic and picking and going from 2 metres out wouldn't say was a strength of his, if that makes sense. Whilst you look at Harry Williams and Hepburn, which I've just mentioned, phenomenal. And Camille Schatt. See his try? Wow.
Oh, what a player. Why'd they sub him off?
Bizarre.
Ridiculous.
Simon
Why did
Zeebo.
They take Zeebo off?
Bizarre. Like,
I know you've got to get Kirtley Beale on, but Kirtley Beale, take Henry Chavoncy off and put him at 12, where he gets the ball more. He's a killer at 12 when he played at Wasps. He was brilliant at 12. I was like, what are they doing taking Schatt off? Schatt was dominating.
Didn't get that at all. The power was incredible for his try, you know, but yeah, that's just, is that French? Can we say that? That's just so French. Why?
It's so random. Whatever it is, it seems ridiculous at the time. And on reflection, it seems ridiculous. Yeah. It was like, this is mad. They're two of the best players. Zeebo was on a hat trick, wasn't he?
Yep, he was. Two good tries. Like, yep.
Yeah, I mean, what are they doing?
No.
And Schatt was like, Schatt's the only hooker I've seen play against Luke Cowan-Dickey this year and think, oh, he might actually have more power. He might be more dynamic than Luke Cowan-Dickey. Like, Luke Cowan-Dickey, for me, should be starting for England against Italy in a couple of weeks.
Joe Simmons the same? Or not?
I think he won't start for England, but
he'll be in the squad.
I would quite like, it's easy to say, isn't it? I mean, just as a fan, I would quite like to see Joe Simmons and Mark Smith playing for England the next five games, starting games.
Yeah.
Joe Simmons, I thought, was just, he was fantastic.
Yep. He can hit
Sam
as
Simmons,
well, mate.
Fantastic. Oh, that hit on Schatt. It was on Camille Schatt, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Wow. He's a tough bloke. And he's just, I think he just does things, really, does simple things really well. And he has some nice touches. And he has power and aggression. And he has the pace to take a gap if it's there. We saw that last week in the semi-final against Bath. If a gap's there, he'll go for it wherever he is. And I think he's a fly half who could potentially almost have it all, whatever that quite means. But Sam Simmons is great. For me, the best player on the field was Johnny Hill.
Led the celebrations after as well. So Johnny, that is.
So Hilly. He is so Hillsy. He loves it. And I think he has... I did a Q&A at Chiefs a few years ago before the match with Johnny Hill and Kai Horseman.
Yep.
And Kai, the big joke was that Kai Horseman was just ripping into Johnny Hill for never actually playing. And it's like, yeah, well, some of the guys who actually play for the club, Johnny just trains with us. He's a nice kid, just trains with us. That was the joke. And Johnny was great fun with it and whatever. He's like, yeah, I don't really play that much. He's obviously younger. And he has developed into the form second row in the Premiership. I think, and for me, if I was picking the team to play Italy in a couple of weeks in Rome, I'd be picking Mario and Johnny Hill to start.
Okay.
I think he's that good. I think he's been outstanding.
Good form. In part of a good team.
But the Chiefs just don't stop. But Racing, it felt like Racing had the game.
Yeah,
a couple
10 minutes
of times
ago.
They could have had it. Yeah.
Lose Exeter down to 14 men. Again, no one really wanted to go for the drop goal or get themselves in a position to go for it.
Or take the scrum when they're down to seven men.
Or take the scrum, exactly. And you sort of think that, you know, it was an opportunity lost by Racing. With that, with those, whatever it was, 7 to 10 minutes camped on the Exeter line to come away with nothing.
That's killer.
Yeah, it is a killer. But Exeter got to do it all again. Next week, they've got Wasps in the Premiership final, if Wasps can recover.
Yeah, now COVID. On that, while we've been podding, I've got an email from the Bods at our production company, and Durders and I filmed this virtual, like, online opener for the show last week.
Yeah.
Ahead of the final, and we might have to refilm it saying Bristol instead of Wasps. Ooh. Because in case Wasps don't recover. So
this was agreed. This was agreed before the season sort of restarted again. If any team can't compete due to COVID, they have to withdraw, which is...
But I think no one knew that. I think it had been agreed, but nobody was told or something.
No.
Yeah. But what Jamie Gibson made a good point. He said, well, what if all the other 10 teams, what if teams 2 to 11 all have COVID and positive cases and can't play, and Sarries are the only team left?
Yeah.
Can they play in the final and win the title and then get relegated? carnage, isn't it?
Oh, you couldn't write that, mate. It'd be amazing. There was Blenslow 2 on the weekend. I don't know if you've seen it.
I've got it taped, boy. Well,
yeah,
recorded. I haven't seen it yet, but I've seen highlights. I've seen Caleb Clark. Stop it.
Meh.
Yeah, Quadzilla.
What a player. How... Just look at the style of his running. Like, he's so wide and so... He's like... He runs like Liam Williams, but like double the size.
Yeah. What'd you do with him? Like...
Not a clue. I mean,
sod that. You'd be all right. You'd stop him. But you're a man stopper.
I think it was quality sort of tactics, I think, by New Zealand. You look at that scrum 5 metres out. You think New Zealand, you know, they're a tactile team. All they do is send Jack Goodhue, goes all the way through James O'Connor, who doesn't really want to make a tackle. And then it's just a pick and go by Aaron Smith. Just class and simple.
Yeah.
You know, they've obviously looked at that thinking, right, James O'Connor doesn't really like tackling. We'll send a 12 who's not massive, it's not like a Caleb Clark, but powerful, straight through that channel. And then it's a simple pick and go. But you know, they were quality on the weekend again, New Zealand. You know, I know there was a draw last week and potentially Australia could have won it, but way, way too powerful. Get on the outside of Australia a little bit too easy. Moanga, again, proving why he will be the 10 moving forward, not Beauden Barrett. I think his control of the game is amazing. Wasn't quite sure why they were doing it in the World Cup last year, to be honest, because everyone was talking about Beauden Barrett, weren't they? And then Moanga comes in and starts at 10, but I can just see why. He's quality. Corabetti should have scored. And now if any kids are watch that game and listen to this, you watch how high he runs at, I think it's Aaron Smith, it might even be Richie Moanga actually, close to the line. He runs high, just trying to bounce him over the line. If he runs low and runs at his legs, he's bouncing over, mate. He is bouncing over. But because he runs high, Richie Moanga ends up soaking up the tackle and he can't get the ball down because he lands on Richie Moanga. And then I think maybe Sam Kane or Surveyor come in and seal the ball off. But that should have been a try because he's a quality finisher. Just the juggernaut of New Zealand keeps going. Sam Kane looked really sharp, really pacey. When he took his try, just to think
he did look good, broke
his neck a while ago. Dane Coles, great footwork for a big bloke, and he's tough as well, and he puts it about. You wouldn't want to mess with him at all. He'd probably be number one on the list of people not to mess with in the New Zealand team. New Zealand at Eden Park, it's phenomenal as well, mate, to see a stadium with crowds.
Yeah. And the Haka, it's the first time they performed Kappa Opango in 2020. And I've seen the Haka a couple of times. I've got the match recorded to watch tonight, but yeah, that Haka was mega.
Yeah, it was.
I love it. I still love the Haka.
Australia, at some stage, need to find I think a 10.
A hacker.
A 10.
Oh.
James O'Connor, really good. Wing 15, 12, 13, but not quite sure he's the man to take Australia forward in that position. They've struggled for a little bit, really, finding, you know, a quality 10 that's going to be around for a long time. If you know what, do you get my gist? You know, someone like a Mwanga, someone like a Dan Carter, like a Michael Liner. You know, they've mixed and matched a fair bit. He's definitely a great player, mate, James Connor, but just worried he's not. I don't think he's the answer for Australia. There we are.
Yeah, I agree with that.
We got through it. Now, I had a couple of complaints on Twitter about the sound last week. Yeah, so it's quite quiet. So I'm going to turn this...
Turn it up.
I'm going to turn this bad boy up for Phil Allen, all right?
Turn it up for Phil.
Phil said he switched off and he listened to another podcast, which made me spit out all my food. Found absolutely disgusting. So I'm keeping it up for him. And also Square Circle, whoever that is. They're on social media. They're on Instagram. Said they couldn't hear clearly, and I'm not sure why. So this is going to be loud in your ears. It's going to be full of bass. It's going to be full of treble. And enjoy it, all right? Soak it all up, guys.
I sometimes
girls.
Wonder if it's their problem, it's their ears.
Yeah, I think so. Maybe it's just a dodgy earphone.
Yeah.
Your own house in order first, all right?
I don't trust Phil. That's what I'm saying. No. Okay?
You see the picture of him, mate. Nor would you.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
Right, good luck to you. Keep going, everyone, for goodness sake, yeah?
Yeah, all right. Speak to you all next week.
Enjoy lockdown, Tommy. Cheers, guys.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.